The OTB Podcast Network with Green Farm on the go. Snack smart with 100% natural protein-powered chicken bites.
You know, that wasn't an All-Ireland winning performance.
Probably should have won the game based on their second half performance.
Is it a step too far to say it was the performance so far of the World Cup? Maybe not.
OTBAN's performance rankings with Gillette.
I'm scratching my head. Our performances just lacked that intensity.
Oh, and it is time for the performance rankings. Where are we starting? Who's in the red?
In the red this week, we've got Eddie Jones to start things off here. Eddie Jones facing the dreaded review. So whenever you hear that phrase review, it's always bad news. It tends to be anyway. The RFU looking into what happened with the Six Nations here. And I think this is a good place to start, because maybe the failings of England are something that we need to take into account before we decide how excited we're going to get about Ireland beating England at the weekend. Like, I think there's people watching this morning who are unhappy with our chirpy tone this morning. And maybe that's down to the fact that they weren't up against much in this current England team at the weekend. So, like, maybe we do need to temper our happiness.
England just beat France. They just beat France. The brilliant French team. They just beat France in under conditions that Wales couldn't do. Where at the end of the game, where they had to produce a winner. Like, this notion that suddenly England are crap because they got beaten by Scotland and they got beaten by Wales. They just beat France. It's the Six Nations. We played quite well. We're allowed to enjoy one game.
Listen, I'm with you. I'm not the person commenting in this morning saying do the opposite of cheering up, cheer down, lads. This morning, but Eddie Jones, yeah, he's like. This is looking at this from a very Irish standpoint. Do you question the future of a head coach who got you to a World Cup final 2 years previously? Like, is there infinite credit in the bank to trust this guy? That this is a guy who had a couple of mediocre Six Nations campaigns in the build-up to the last World Cup and still managed to beat the All Blacks in a World Cup semi-final. Sure, English arrogance got in the way and they got smashed by South Africa in the final, but we would bite Eddie Jones' arm off to get a World Cup final place at this point. Like, maybe it's just an Irish view on this whole thing, and maybe the English expect to not only win the World Cup, but to win every single Six Nations year after year. Maybe we come from very different places on that. But I just wonder if this review does result in added pressure on Eddie Jones, are they putting undue pressure on a man who might actually be their greatest chance of winning the next World Cup?
Well, yeah, maybe. One thing I would say about that is that I watched like 3 minutes of the Gallagher Premiership and it was the 3 minutes where Bristol scored two tries to beat Northampton, basically scored a try and then scored a try from the kickoff. And it was like, what? And you're like, oh, it's Pat Lamb. And then Pat Lamb is just there having the crack afterwards, like on the verge of his team being the best, most exciting team in club rugby. And you're like, ooh, what if he was in charge of England? That would be very bad for the rest of the world. So there must be somebody in the RFU going, have a bit of that? Can we have just a little bit of that? Because he knows the culture. He's been in this part of the world for long enough now that he understands how we play, how the Scottish and Welsh teams would play from his Celtic League experience. I'd be very, very dangerous if Pat Lamb was to get the England job. I'd be terrified of that. So I want England to keep with Eddie Jones, and I actually think he's the right man for the job, Owen.
Like, I see what you're saying about that, but like, what Eddie Jones brought to the table over the last couple of years, and like, this is not just Eddie Jones, this is the likes of John Mitchell as well, and the rest of his backroom team, was a ferocity that Ireland actually got a little bit shocked by, I felt, over the last few years. And was that just simply missing on Saturday? Like, what was the major contributing factor to such a difference in performance, or, you know, the viewing experience in an Ireland versus England game? Because it had become almost routine. I know four losses in a row maybe isn't routine, but it was getting there.
No, it was. It was routine, because Saracens had done it to Leinster on two separate occasions, yeah, as well. They'd beaten us up in the scrum. They knew how to stop us being creative, even when it was at club level. I think a lot of different things happened. I don't think the Saracens players are match battle-hardened and totally fully fit. I think if they were playing all the time in the Premiership, then that would have been one of those things. I think there's a post-World Cup loss hangover that England are suffering, and you know, COVID has equally prevented them from, you know, having that relationship with their fans in the aftermath of that, and then also bedding down new players. Like, I don't think England are in crisis at all. I think that this is kind of a mid-cycle thing for them. And I certainly wouldn't be rushing to sack their coach. But I do think it would be catastrophic for us if Pat Lam was to become the England manager. Coach.
Yeah, well, I always see Eddie Jones like the Joker, to be honest. There will be a moment where he will probably come back and be laughing in our faces once again soon. I'm particularly quite wary of writing England off.
You've done it before. One last thing I would say about England is that they are flat track bullies. That like they like to be the biggest kid in the schoolyard. And if you can somehow make it not about their terms of engagement, if there are other things that you can do, like moving the ball the way we did and being completely accurate at every possibility and not knocking on and not giving them the opportunity in scrums and not throwing your first or not paying attention when they throw their line out over the top and smash into you. Also, they didn't have Manu Tuilagi. I think we should, you know, this is, let's beat an England team with Manu Tuilagi in it and then start talking about reaching a World Cup final.
They didn't believe in Apollo, because that was the two they were missing in 2018, wasn't it? They were missing both of them.
Yeah.
And that really took away their power game. So I guess 50% of them being available ain't bad from Ireland's perspective. Next up in the poor performances is Warren Gatland. This was not a good weekend for Warren Gatland, Ger, because Wales lost a game of rugby. I'm not sure if you were watching that on Saturday night, but they had a grand slam and then they didn't have a grand slam at the end of the day. So Warren Gatland can't just make the Lions Wales light. He can't just install all his former buddies into the Lions team. How much does that Leigh Doolan try affect Warren Gatland and his ability to stack the Lions with Welsh players?
What's the over-under on the number of starting players? That's assuming fitness, right? Right now, if the Lions played South Africa in the first test next Saturday, what's the over-under on the number of Wales players who are in the team?
Six.
I'm going eight.
You're going eight.
I'm going eight. I'd say that Warren Gatland's picking eight, and I'm looking at the Guardians team of the tournament. They managed to find eight. Wales obviously won the Grand Slam, did they? Wales must have won the Grand Slam.
The tournament's not over either. Is one other fact.
Where is it here? So Louis Rees-Sammet. Maybe I've miscalculated here. No, it's actually only seven. So it's full back row: Navidi Tipperick-Faletau, Alan Wynne-Jones, Ken Owens and Louis Rees-Sammet. I miscalculated. I apologise. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5. It's only six. Sorry, it's only six.
And I would say that actually you can, if you're going to use that as your benchmark, like, it's not going to be an all Welsh back row for the Lions. Like, when England have two of the best back rows in the world, in Curry and Vunipola, Ireland might have something to say. Like, Wales obviously have an outstanding back row. Clearly, they deserve to have the back row of the tournament. But when it comes to actually picking the Lions team, like, does Gatland actually, like, he'd almost be edging towards the under.
He might pick the full. He might keep those partnerships. Tyke Byrne would be pretty peeved not to be in that back row.
Yeah, well, and here's the thing, like, how does this weekend then factor into the Lions conversation? Like, I would have initially thought that a Pro 14 final would have no bearing on it, but Ireland winning, does that then make Gatland buy a subscription to Premier Sports and make sure he's watching? Does he break quarantine and actually come and watch the game at the weekend? Does this actually become a big factor for the Lions?
Well, maybe he sticks around because he was in the Ireland bubble for the last week anyway.
Oh, yeah.
I think that ultimately the next 3 or 4 weeks are going to be key for the Lions. I think that the Six Nations is important, but because of the way the season has gone, players are finding form, players are getting fit. If you think back to when Alan Quinlan made the Lions selection, he made it off the back of brilliant performances in Europe after the Six Nations was already over. So I'd say that there's plenty of room for some bolters. I think someone like Louis Rees-Sammet, it's irrelevant. If he doesn't play another second of rugby, that guy is on the plane, and assuming he's fit, he's starting that first test, and I can't wait to see what that's going to be like. But I think that this game next weekend is suddenly absolutely massive. And it's massive in the context of Munster rugby when you consider that Leinster are going to be without Ringrose, without Will Connors, without Caelan Doris, and without James Ryan. It's now or never, Owen. It's now or never. This is the moment where Munster effectively, I think, have mostly got rude health for everybody, right? I'm just trying to think off the top of my head. There's probably Kilcoyne, obviously, would be a significant loss.
And Snaiman.
Yes, sorry. But like, you haven't had him all season. So notwithstanding that, like, this is it. This is, there's a trophy on the line. There's the emotion of CJ Sanders' last domestic game ever. They're surely, you must be favourites, I would say, to win this game.
Well, I mean, you can Google that pretty quickly. If you're trying to snare me into talking up Munster, then by all means, paint it as such. But like, the other factor here is obviously a certain out half who has rested, who certainly isn't playing test rugby, I should say, over the last few weeks, and might be in a better shape to actually affect a game this weekend. Like, it's a huge game for Munster. I would argue, though, that it has massive... What's this? What have you just discovered?
Leinster minus seven. No way. No. Absolutely not. This is a pick 'em. This is a pick 'em game. Saturday at 4 o'clock.
You can't argue with the bookies, but 7 points does seem a little bit large. I would probably make Leinster maybe 3 point favourites at this stage.
One and a half point favourites for this game.
This is a huge sort of benchmark moment for Leinster as well. If they can come away from the weekend and say, yeah, all our players were playing test rugby the previous weekend, we were beaten up, we've got injuries, and we still beat Munster, then how does the Leinster supporter feel? They feel pretty superior, I would venture to say, if that's how it turns out this weekend.
Yeah, absolutely. But like, Leinster just got beaten at home from a winning position at the weekend too. So, I don't know. That game is... all joking aside, I would make Munster slight favourites for that game.
I'm not sure if I'd go that far, but I do think it's unbelievably important. Like, it is, in terms of games that are fixed, it is the biggest game of the season, of course. Like, as I said last week, I do think Munster, if they had either or when it comes to the trophies, they will always take the European trophy, as would Leinster. But just the specific context of this, getting one over Leinster and having that guarantee of a trophy, because if they win the following week in Europe, there's no guarantee of a trophy.
No.
I think that is just so, so important. And what is it that came up in the quiz last week? Six Pro 12 titles, was it, that Leinster have won since Munster last won? Is it six? Five or six? I can't
you
even remember my
questions.
Own quiz. It's a significant number, and it's a lot. You need maybe one hand or two to count it. But anyway, it is a hugely significant evening for Munster. And like, we don't want to frame it all around Joey Carberry, but it's hard not to when he has been one of the players Irish rugby fans have been so excited about over the last few years, and he's not on the pitch last weekend when they do the job.
And a point of information, I meant to bring this up a little bit earlier on, but how about this with Sexton? Plays 10, Carberry plays 12, and Henshaw plays 13. Who wouldn't be excited about that for Ireland? That'd be amazing.
It would be. They should try it out at some point. Like, I do think, and like, is it Keith Earls and Gary Ringrose on the wings then, as Quinlan was suggesting earlier on? Put get Ringrose in the team at some place as well. I definitely think that maybe we go back to a place where we see Ireland playing Ringrose and Henshaw midfield again, and that partnership has just so many miles on the clock in a positive sense, that whatever Ringrose is different.
I think things have changed, that Ringrose is going to have to come back and play really well to get back in that team now.
Yeah, maybe. I think that he probably does, like, if it's a clean slate and at the start of next season himself and Aki and Farrell are all fit, if things are as they stand right now, I still think that Ringrose starts. Like, let's not forget that Bundy Aki got sent off at the weekend. Chris Farrell probably needs to put himself in the shop window more for Andy Farrell. Like, I love Chris Farrell. I think he's a phenomenal player and he's an absolute game breaker. But he actually, I think, does need to get himself to nearer to the front of the queue in an Ireland sense once again. But those are, and that's in a roundabout way of saying that the Lions are all to play for. So Warren Gatland, he had to rip up his sheet maybe on Saturday evening. He's down as a poor performer at the weekend. Unlucky, Warren. At number three then, we've spoken a lot about this. You can only put them in orange, really, as Wales. Like, an unbelievable performance from them for a lot of the game, and then to still come away with that utter disappointment, because it would have been one of the great sort of screw you stories that Welsh sport would have ever had, the way they were written off by certain people before the tournament. And to turn around and win a Grand Slam would have been outrageous. And to have that taken away from them at the last moment, genuinely, you do feel a little bit sorry for them.
What?
Genuinely. You've got to feel a tad sorry.
Hang on a second. It's 79-36 and they go off their feet and concede a penalty. What are you doing? Complete madness. It's exactly the same idiotic stuff where they kick the ball back to us. with like 83 minutes on the clock. Like, what are you doing? It was lunatic stuff. It was kamikaze. And here's the thing, right? Like, again, just to keep going back, my concern with this was that Wales were awful last year, absolutely awful. And if Pivac had had a bad Six Nations, there's every chance they would have sacked him. But it turns out he's really good. And it, like, he's been ruthless. He's changed up his backroom team. He's got like players playing at an elite level. He's randomly taken a winger who has 100 caps and gone, yeah, you're going to be a centre for us now. And there's a new lease of life for George North. All of a sudden, Wales, I think Wales look really dangerous from this point for the next couple of seasons out for a World Cup win. Like, Dan Biggar has become somebody who is really ultimately trustworthy and reliable. And I don't know why they took him off. That would be the one thing that you'd be wondering about at the weekend, kind of prefixed selection decision. We're going to make those subs, which, by the way, Andy Farrell didn't do. He didn't just take players off because the cavalry comes in, there's oxygen depletion, you're going to make bad decisions. Like, no, I trust you to be a man and go out there and play on the basis that you're going to raise your game as the match goes on. I thought that was really against the received notion of the statistics and the science, and had a bit of feel to it, which I really liked. Like, it might sound anti-intellectual, but I really liked the fact that he seemed to be playing on the basis of what was in front of him, as opposed to at a fixed moment in the match, I'm going to decide my front row will be replaced, my halfback partnership will be replaced, and the subs will come on.
Yeah, that is true, actually, because it does seem quite formulaic at times when it comes to the substitutions in the front row. And that brings us nicely on to the quality performances from the weekend. We've got Ireland and France in the green here. I think we've spoken a good bit about Ireland and their quality performances. And I guess we kind of touched on it there again with England and the context around this. Like, what is there a sense, I wonder, at this point that Andy Farrell has secured whatever the prize money is? He has, you know, backed up those two performances against Italy and Scotland with another win and has given himself a little more job security as a result of what happened at the weekend. And is it at this point now that maybe we start to see a little more risk-taking from management? I think Quinny said it earlier on that he's excited to see a few changes. I think Brian O'Driscoll is making the point maybe that you can't necessarily sack your manager from this point on or your head coach from this point on. That there was a rocky spell for Andy Farrell at the start of this campaign, and it was crucial that he actually navigated his way through it and got to the three wins after losing the opening two. That I wonder now if we're actually going to start to see a riskier version of management.
I think so. I think that certainly was all the conversation points that I wanted to bring up pre-tournament, that everything was riding on this one because it is too late. You can't, and we won't change. That's it. His job is now secure all the way through to the World Cup. And it should be, because they made the decision that they were going to give him the job, and they knew that he was an inexperienced head coach. They knew that he would be learning on the job. He has done that. That part of it is over. And yeah, I think that, like, I actually think there was enough from the attacking perspective in that second half in particular that you're beginning to see the influence of Mike Catt too. That from here you begin to see growth from a position of confidence. And I think it's the confidence that he has the job, that he has the right backroom team, that he's made those decisions, that they've picked some, like, that team selection was not an obvious team selection, I think, to anybody.
No.
You know, it really wasn't to pick Conan. That was like, and it obviously was a triumph. And I don't think it was an obvious even to pick the wingers. I don't think it was guaranteed that Keith Earls was going to get back in the team when he did get back in the team and played really well in the Scotland game too. So, you know, he's been brave under the radar in some ways.
And here's the thing as well, like, maybe how this differs to good wins in the past is that the good wins have almost come from a collection of perfect outcomes, and you almost get the feeling that the team picks itself at the end of the perfect outcome happening. Nothing could be further from the truth if you said that about Ireland at the moment. Like, even James Ryan now needs to fight to ensure that he's back in the team. Of course he is. He's like, I mean, he's going to be a future Ireland captain. But like, the win happened without him. I mean, Peter O'Mahony, for me, was a banker to start last week, and it just didn't happen. I mean, he's going to be fighting tooth and nail to get in there. The hooker conversation is a fascinating one. Porter versus Furlong is going to be a battle that goes on for the next little while, even though Furlong looks like he's back to his best. We've talked about the nines and the tens all year long, and we've just spoken about the midfield. Andy Farrell does not know his best team, and that is a real positive.
In the way that 3 weeks ago you would have said that, and they were like, oh, I can't believe he doesn't know his best team.
Yeah.
That's the difference between glass half full and glass half empty, Owen.
Well, yeah, that is very true. So Irish rugby very much in the green. And to finish up, the last word this morning goes to French rugby. They've gone through a number of dovetails as well this year. Like, crowning them as 2023 World Cup champions seemed premature when they got beaten by England a week or two ago. And at the same time, they have an ability to put a team to the sword like no other in the Northern Hemisphere, and maybe in world rugby. When this attack gets going fully, they are an absolute sight to behold. Is there just enough Frenchness in them for them to blow further Grand Slams, future Grand Slams, I should say?
No.
Is there enough Frenchness about them to blow their home World Cup? I think there might be, but no. God, they're good to watch. Don't watch France play rugby, basically, is the advice at this point.
Excellent advice. Every Monday morning here on OTBM, we're giving you the chance to win a Gillette starter pack. All you got to do is get in touch with your suggestions for who needs to be on the performance rankings. France have won it this week. You can enter, rather, over the weekend on Twitter or on the OTB IG stories. Owen says, Charles Olivant, captain, leader, got the try at 77 minutes to begin that sensational comeback versus Wales with a grand slam on the line. Rachel Blackmore for dominating Cheltenham. We decided at the last minute to make it rugby exclusive given the events over the course of the weekend, but Rachel Blackmore would obviously have been in the green. Solskjaer should have been red for being reliant on individual brilliance rather than attacking patterns, and Fred in the red for being so bad on the ball and not being able to play when he's pressed. Did Harry Maguire really need to pass on the ball? I don't know. Anyway, look, Jack Colan, on the day we waved goodbye to CJ, he stood up and was counted. Oscar says, good Irish attack, levels above what it's been, and best Irish performance since beating the All Blacks. Eddie Jones, 5, Man United, 4, Wales, 3, Rachel Blackmore, 2, Irish Rugby, 1. That's not a million miles away. But congratulations to Tadhg Fanning, who's won a Gillette starter pack this Monday morning on OTBAM. His persistent selection of Tadhg Byrne and Tadhg Furlong, it's the Tadhg Union in the performance rankings every week, has paid off. So well done to you, Tadhg Fanning. You're picking up a Gillette starter pack this Monday. That is this week's Gillette performance rankings.
OTBAM's performance rankings with Gillette. The OTB Podcast Network with Green Farm on the go. Snack smart with 100% natural protein-powered chicken bites.